Von Meilen und Zeilen. Der Abenteuer-Podcast des Delius Glasing Verlags. Mit Schriftsteller und Globetrotter Tim Kruse.
Heute geht es um Traumerfüllung. Wobei es darum eigentlich immer geht in diesem Podcast. Mike Dodd hat sich einen uralten Traum erfüllt und ist mit seiner 40 Jahre alten Honda Goldwing ans Nordkap gefahren. Fjordwärts heißt sein Buch, und wer alte Motorräder und den Norden Europas liebt, der muss sich dieses Buch mit den unglaublich schönen Bildern einfach besorgen. Geschrieben hat das Ganze Lena Sieb, eine Kollegin und mittlerweile Freundin von Mike. Und da Mike Engländer ist, machen wir das Ganze jetzt auf Englisch natürlich, und die schwierigen Wörter übersetze ich immer. Mike, would you do this adventure again?
Yeah, absolutely. But I would do it differently. It was definitely an education. Yes, the short answer is yes, I would, definitely.
Lena, how was it for you to write about an adventure that you didn't take place in? You know, he just told you his story and you wrote the book. How was it?
It was quite bizarre, to be honest. I never thought I could tell the adventure of another person. Obviously, I'm honored and... that Mike gave me this important task. But, you know, it was made easier by the fact that I love Norway, and I was actually in Norway at the exact same time as Mike. We didn't do the trip together, of course, but I was there at the same time. I know the country really well, and it was that kind of adventure that I would have done for myself if I had a Mrs. B or a Honda Goldwing. So, my imagination helped me with writing the book, and obviously we spent quite a bit of time talking about it, and the wonderful picture also made it quite easy.
Yeah, it's well written, really. I loved reading it. And why is the this good old motorcycle, why is it called Mrs. B?
That's actually quite a dull reason. I should make up some really cool story. Because it's just because I used to call, I'm not really into naming my bikes or cars, and I just started calling her Bike. And my friend was like, that's awful, you can't call such a grand old machine just Bike. It should be called Mrs. B. So it just kind of stuck, and it's nothing more glamorous than that, to be honest.
You're a photographer, you've been shooting photos all over the world, you've been everywhere, and then you decided to leave the house to go on a great trip for yourself, not to take pictures of other people, but do your thing finally.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm an automotive photographer, and I kind of work with like sort of expensive brands, and quite often we end up doing events where you're traveling with people in their expensive vehicles going to beautiful places, and you're kind of, I'm there to record their experience, and it's usually quite dramatic and impressive and amazing. And after a while, just like, oh, I'm just like watching everybody else having a great time. I want to go and do this. So yeah, it was kind of like, I want to do it for me. But then you kind of end up in this, sort of awkward situation where you still kind of want to have a photographer there doing the pictures, but obviously you are the photographer. So you're kind of like trying to have the experience and be the photographer at the same time. So there's like a kind of conflict. Which is obviously what the whole book's kind of about. So then I just went to the extreme, and I was like, you know what, I'm not going to take a picture, I'm not going to take a camera, I'm just going to focus on the experience. And it was almost a kind of rebellion, or like, you know, kind of, I'm, you know, throwing my toys out the pram, going, look, I'm just going to defy everyone, because all my friends had said, oh, you must take a camera because we want to know what you're doing, kind of thing. And it was almost like cut my nose to spite my face kind of thing. And also, I guess, a bit of a personal experiment, right? Especially in this day and age.
And you left the house without the camera, and then you went back 5 minutes later and you picked it up because you said you are a photographer, so you have to have a camera.
Exactly. And I think it's that you just don't want to make a mistake, right? So I thought if I took my camera, I could always choose not to use it. Whereas if I don't have it, you know, like I try and live by the saying, you're better looking at it than for it. So the last minute I just thought, this is ridiculous. You can't be going all this way and not take a camera.
Yeah. Lena, when you saw the pictures, did you decide which pictures to take, or was that the edition, the publisher?
Oh, I think it was Well, Mike and me really together. I mean, all of his pictures were fantastic. So I don't think we really made a choice, right, Mike? We used nearly all of your pictures. And I vividly remember when I first saw them, Mike and I had been on an adopt together.
And McLaren, I heard.
Yeah, that was very long ago. McLaren was very, very long ago. I think the trip we did when we first talked about the picture, Mike, must have been south of France, right? The story we did about Arles. That's a really pretty town. And while we were there, we got to talking about his trip, and he showed me some images, and I was like, oh my God, we have to make a book with these images. They're way too good to just be on Instagram. Yeah. And I had seen many pictures of Mike, but obviously these had all been related to some sort of work that he did. And I felt that these images were very different to everything I had seen of him, because they just spoke a very, you know, a unique sort of individual language. I think it was his view rather than the view of, you know, his clients. And that's what I felt was really unique about them. And then, you know, we said, look, why don't we just go to Dealers Glazing and suggest that book as an idea? Yeah. And I didn't really think they would take it, but, you know, they were like, wow, that's great. Let's do it.
So, wow. I felt that we connected over the story quite a lot as well, though. Yeah, that was you related very much to what I was kind of saying. Mm.
How do you like the pictures, Mike? Are they different from your average pictures, like from what you do in your job?
Yeah, definitely. Very different. Well, I mean, yes and no. Like I say, I'm an automotive photographer, journalist. I'm taking pictures of cars in studios and so forth. But these are similar to when I sort of, you know, go out on these events with the manufacturers and taking pictures of cars on big roads and stuff. I guess the difference is, yeah, just the physical side of it. Because obviously, you know, I would normally be up the side of a mountain somewhere, like shooting down as someone goes past, and you've got radios and you've got, you know, yeah, as opposed to this, which was much more, you know, I was having to go and hike up the side of somewhere and hope that this was like going to work, and then climb down the mountain and ride my bike backwards and forwards and go back up again and check the pictures and then come back down again and then ride backwards and forwards. So like that. So the execution was very, very different.
Yeah. And the self-timer must really, like, you have to really know how it works.
Yeah, well, I just took a lot of pictures, so it'd be going off like every second. And so for every shot you see in that book, I probably have, you know, like, 100 frames or 200 frames. And then you just pick one. So it's quite a boy. So I guess the style of picture, I think maybe as well when I'm doing the sort of my, with these pictures, I tended to pull back on the grading as well, because I didn't want to get sucked into this, like creating something that wasn't really there. And it's, I think when you're doing something for somebody else as a client, you can kind of make things a little bit more theatrical. And with my pictures, I wanted to try and represent images that anybody else could go and take. Yeah, you didn't need to be there in a particular time. I wasn't there at a particular time of day. I was just whenever I was there. You didn't need a tripod. You didn't need any special equipment, et cetera, et cetera. Do you know what I mean? And also then if you like retouch them and grade them so they look sort of epic, again, that's not really what somebody's going to see. So I actually pulled back on quite a lot of the grading on them. So
one of the titles in the book is Here and Now, which is maybe overused, but in the connection of your book, it makes sense, because you said so many people take so many pictures of Instagram and all the social media, but you trying not to take pictures, which didn't really work, but sometimes it did, changed your perspective to really be there in the here and now on your adventure.
Definitely. I think I found myself getting sucked back into this, like everything had to be, you know, I was madly looking for a picture, looking for the best spot rather than drinking in the scene. So then I was like, I cut it off, and then it's like, well, I'm not going to take a picture for like the next couple of days. And then it just made me really think of like, how am I going to tell the story? How am I going to show where I've been? Like if I don't have a picture to show somebody, like, and it kind of made me realize how much we rely on going, look at these are my holiday pictures sort of thing. And so like, well, but then this is kind of a modern problem, right? We haven't had cameras that long. So before people had cameras, and some people can't draw or write, so when they went, but they still told stories of their travels. So you have to really then think, okay, if I'm going to retell this, I've got to actually drink it in. I've actually got to think, what color was that sunset? You know, what color were the rocks? How cold was it? You know, what color was the sea, and how did, do you know what I mean? And so it was really interesting. And I'd be like, right, so if I was a traveler like in the 1600s, how would I be thinking about this? You know, what stories would I tell? But then again, as well, you kind of, I know I talked about like the Instagram thing and things aren't real and so forth, but then you kind of think, well, maybe that used to happen back in the day anyway. You know, people tell tales and they, oh yeah, I was on this adventure and I saw a wolf and all that. They probably didn't see a wolf at all, you know, but it's kind of like the same thing, isn't it? You know? So it was just kind of interesting to then just try and experience it rather than rely on and have photos as an addition to your experience rather than they're there solely to tell a story.
Then we have Lena, who wrote the text, and there's like one passage in the book where you overtake a whole gang of Hell's Angels. There's no picture about them, but I have the picture in my head. And Lena, you managed to draw that picture with words.
I was just going to say that it all became very clear, the difference in between, you know, how a writer drinks in the scene or imagines the scene and how a photographer would probably go about talking about his holiday. When Mike had to tell his story to me, because I obviously had a book in my mind that and scenes that I wanted to put together to make, you know, his trip more vivid, and not just use the images for it, but also, you know, create an atmosphere where it would become clear what he was going through inside of his head, you know, not just what he saw, but, you know, what he went through as a person, you know, what you felt and what you thought and stuff. And that scene was something that I wanted to include, but because when he told me about it, I just felt, you know, this is the kind of thing that I can totally relate to. Yeah. how you'd feel when you overtake a motorcycle gang and, you know, being on a 40-year-old bike while, you know, they could easily rip off your head, and the kind of stuff that goes through one's mind when you're on your own, you know.
Not that we're tarring all motorcycle clubs with the same brush, of course.
No, and I think you know, if you think back to this moment, you'll probably go back and think, well, that wasn't a dangerous situation at all. But sometimes we just sort of get stuck in our thoughts when you're traveling, especially alone, and, you know, you haven't got anyone to talk to. So this is the kind of thing that happens.
Yeah. And also, I just watched The Sons of Anarchy as well, which obviously was very strong in my mind.
How was traveling on your own?
Interesting. It's definitely, I like spending time on my own. I'm a great, spending time in my own head is absolutely fine. I guess it's just that same thing, isn't it? Whenever you travel on your own, it's that being able to share the experience with somebody, and particularly later on, and go, oh, do you remember, you know, when we did this, or how that was, or something. I think, spending a lot of time in your, like, because I was riding with a helmet that wasn't particularly quiet, for example, I couldn't really listen to music or anything like that. And I was riding every day, all day. So I was always on my own, like in my helmet, just thinking, basically, which throws up some interesting things. You end up thinking about a lot of stuff, and then when you stop, you're not like then downloading with anybody, you're just thinking some more. So this sort of forced thinking, I think, or forced sort of mentally being on your own, was quite a big experience. I've never really done that before, because you're always usually doing something or going somewhere or going into a restaurant or meeting people, or, you know, when you're normally traveling. But just to be like on your own in a helmet all day, every day for 3 weeks was interesting. I think it's a good experience. I'd quite like to do it again with a companion would be kind of cool.
Yeah. I travel a lot too, and I love sharing adventures with a friend.
No, I was just going to say, because I have travelled the year before I went, I rode the
same. You went to Switzerland, right?
Yeah, that's right. I rode down to Switzerland, Northern Italy. And I went with my brother, and, you know, it was great as well, like, to have, be able to share that. But there are also times where you're like, I want to go this way. And they're like, oh, but I want to go this way. And you're like, so you have to kind of like, I guess that's the downside of traveling with somebody, but there's lots of upsides too.
Yeah. You were talking about listening to music, and I have an old camper. It's 40 years old, and I don't listen to music because I want to listen to the engine, because I want to hear when that thing starts to stutter. And your engine kind of left you too. You had the ignition coils, in German Zündspule, that kind of didn't really work anymore. So what did you do then in the middle of nowhere?
I went to several. I was kind of struggling a little bit because everywhere, because it's an old bike, and everyone now rides obviously modern bikes, and no one really knew like how to fix it or anything like that, or getting spare parts was kind of impossible. And anyway, but I managed to find this motorcycle shop, and this old guy like helped me out very kindly, and we took it all apart. And we just patched it up, basically. We patched it up, and then I just kind of rode the rest of the journey waiting for the bike to conk out, essentially. Which is kind of like that's the worry. That's why it's quite stressful, because I didn't really know what was going to happen. And I was like, I knew it was misfiring and so forth. But like, am I overheating the engine? Is it going to blow up? Am I damaging it? You know, and all the time I'm getting further and further and further away from home. So it was just like, do I turn around now and go back, or like, because I can't get it fixed here really, because nobody knows how to fix it. So do I still keep going? And I've still got like another like 1,000 miles to go to get to the top, you know? So yeah, it was basically a wing and a prayer, if I'm honest.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, I knew it wasn't like I was in the middle of the desert, you know, I wasn't going to die if it totally broke down. But I did start looking at, you know, trains back home, things like that. And I started thinking about, right, if she dies, I just have to leave her here, because like the amount of money it would cost to transport her back to England would just be ridiculous. So I'll just have to leave her here and get a train home or something, you know. So I did actually start looking at that.
But then, as every traveler, you were lucky you found the right person to fix it,
more or less.
Well, to help me through, yeah, to patch it up for sure. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There are some very kind people out there. So it was good. It was good. And it's funny because Facebook, I'm not really a Facebook person, but all of a sudden Facebook became my lifeline, because there's lots of, you know, motorcycle groups and that on Facebook. So that was really good.
Yeah. Lena, did you follow Mike on Instagram and on Facebook during the travel?
You know, funnily, I didn't. We only sort of spoke about this trip a couple of months later, I guess, Mike. I didn't follow your life. Also because I was in Norway during the same time. And I went off social media during my holiday.
Oh, that's good.
So no, I didn't follow him live.
Oh, wow. So he could have visited you.
Yeah, I think you must have passed through the area where I was, I think, but I
crossed on the road, and we don't even know.
I was part of the motorcycle gang, I can tell you.
That was that blonde hair I could see. Amazing.
Mike, how was it to reach the Northern Cape? To get there?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I was going through, like, I guess this whole thing was a bit of a, you know, I was looking inside myself and, you know, trying to work out what I wanted out of life, etc., etc., and like how much my job impacted me. And so I was thinking about quite a lot. So I think I had in my head that this was going to be some, like, I don't know, like when I would get there, it'd be like a huge revelation. There'd be like, you know, a voice of archangels and like a beam of light would come down through the clouds, and I'd suddenly realize what my meaning and purpose in life was. But funnily enough, none of that happened. And I got there and I was just like, oh, okay. So this is Nordkap.
I know that feeling so well. I know that feeling so well. You reach your goal and it's just another point on the road.
Yeah, exactly. And that was good experience as well, because it's just like suddenly I realized, like, it's not about where you go, right? It's about How you go there. I mean, you can have an amazing experience in your own front living room and you can have a rubbish experience on top of Everest, right? It doesn't, exactly. You know, the location makes no difference to a degree. And so that was kind of an enlightenment, I suppose. As I was actually getting there, I was quite emotional, like the last, like, you know, 3 or 4 kilometers. Because I was like, oh my God, this has been so stressful. And I'm getting further and further into the desolate kind of, especially the last kind of like day's ride. There's just nothing. It's just open plain. And I'm like, and it's really cold and I was really badly dressed. And I'm like, if I break down here, I'm not going to die, but it's going to be a really miserable experience. So that was actually quite emotional when I actually finally rode up. And it's kind of fun as well, because there's lots of motorcycle adventurers there. Also, I found out afterwards, or when I was there, a lot of them don't even ride their bikes there. They get them transported to the south really? Of Norway, and then they ride up Norway. And then once they get to the north top of Norway, they get them transported back again. Really? So I was like, oh, guys, you're just not doing this properly. And there I was on this old 40-year-old bike, albeit backfiring, not really starting properly, black smoke, but I did it. So, and then I'm just in a leather jacket and jeans, shivering away. So, but yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. But
yeah, that's a different experience. Lena, how was it for you to creep into the head of this man?
It was lovely. You know, as a writer, you sort of you thrive on such moments, don't you? It's the climax of such a trip, and I of course, as a writer, you tend to be overly dramatic. So I think my fantasy carried me away every once in a while, and Mike had to exactly, and I think he had to reel me back in at the point where I made him a smoker, even though he didn't smoke, because I just felt it would be the perfect moment for him to just have a cigarette after all of this. But you know, I realized, and that's probably healthy that I did, that this is not a novel I'm writing. But you know, I did realize that this is his story. It's not a novel, and it's, you know, it's quite an intimate, well, thing really to write about someone else's experience, yeah. And not sort of overstep your boundaries, and it also realize that, you know, you're writing about a real experience, about a person's real feelings. So, you know, you have to be true to the facts, but at the same time make it, you know, an interesting and cool story. So I hope I did well, not overstep my boundaries, and I hope that once it gets translated into English, Mike won't read it and go, what? We want to make sure Mike can read his own books.
I'd like to actually be able to show it to my friends. But I do feel like, Lena, I feel like you've been on the journey with me now. It's kind of funny, because, you know, we talk about, you know, not having somebody there with you to, you know, share the experiences with. I almost feel like you have been there, because you know so much now, and you know that Norway so well, that when I say something, oh, this, you're like, oh yeah, I totally know what you mean, you know. It's quite nice.
I nearly say yeah, I remember, because in my head I was there. But that's, I think that's really the work of a writer, yeah? You put yourself into someone else's shoes, and whether that's an imaginary person or a real person doesn't really make a difference. You do go through that story. You live it, you breathe it, almost like an actor. When you're putting yourself into another person, it becomes one, really. And I kind of feel like I've been to North Cape, even though I haven't, which is so funny. But, you know, having the images of Mike in my mind, and, you know, having spoken to him so much, it does, to some extent, feel like it's partly my story too, yeah.
Yeah, wow. I know that feeling so well. I wrote a book about a trip that I did myself once with a guru, and I changed names because people didn't want to really occur in the book. And after I wrote it, I didn't remember which is the right name and which is the name of the book, you know? Like, things change in your head. It's weird. How was it to hold the book in your hands, Lena?
It was wonderful. It's, you know, you put so much work into this and so much thought. I think both of us only realized when you know, the project had already started, because in the beginning you go like, well, you know, we all have all the images ready, and then we just speak, you know, for a couple of hours, mm-hmm. and then pretty much the story's going to be done. But it took us, what, over a year
Really? Wow.
You know, going forth and back and picking the right images and talking through the story, and it's really a lot of work. And then when you finally hold the product in your hands, it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love it because I know, you know, for Mike that just, it must be a very different feeling to just having done the trip as a private sort of journey. And then suddenly, mm-hmm. you know, I think, you know, having a book about your own trip must be just very different.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's the most bizarre thing about this whole thing was that this was never meant to be a book. I never had the idea of ever, like, sort of recording it, or which it kind of was a pain, because, like, you know, Lena would be going, so what happened then, or what, and I'm like, I can't remember. Like, I didn't write notes every day or anything, because this wasn't the point of it. So that's even more bizarre now to see mm-hmm. now see my journey again, going, it's like, you know, someone was there taking pictures and writing for me, and like, it's almost like it's sort of, I don't know, come out from nowhere, if you like, or kind of. Yeah, it's kind of strange. So it's kind of almost weird, because I never expected there to ever be a book or anything like that, or the pictures to even go anywhere further than my Instagram sort of thing. So it's really amazing. But I mean, I have to say, like, Lena's done a lot of work on this, and I've been a bit rubbish, and just all I've been doing is just throwing notes at her, going, oh, then this happened, then this happened, and then this happened. She's like, but how did you feel? I'm like, I can't remember. She's like, well, I'll just have to work it out. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And it's like, she's done an incredible job on this. So yeah, if I had written it, it would be about 20 words and then just all pictures. So
oh, it's so funny. I really squeezed the last bits out of you, Mike, on that book, because I really wanted to know so much about things that were, you know, several months or even years back. So, you know, even having to remember them is hard. But then going into that sort of level of detail and asking, so, you know, what color was the sky? What was the smell like? What was the atmosphere like? Where, you know, what else did you see? How did that woman look? That kind of stuff.
And I think it's really interesting as well, you say about looking at things like as a writer. I mean, I look at things as a photographer. So I know what the shape of things were and the colors and things like that, but I don't really sort of think about how I was feeling, or do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that was really, that's been a real eye-opener for me going forward.
Lena, you have done such a great job, really. It's so vivid. It's so nice to read this book.
Thank you.
I just want you to make your own adventure and write a book about your own thing. Are you going to do that?
Well, I don't know. I don't even know if I could write a book like that from my own experience, because
it's a different
it's
thing.
It's autobiography, you know, and I think it gives you a degree of freedom to be able to write about someone else's adventure rather than your own, or an imaginary True. Person, because that person can go through so much that, you know, that you weave in your own experience, of course, but it's not exactly what happens. But so I think my next project will be a novel rather than, you know, describing my own adventure. But it could well be a novel of an adventurer. Why not?
Exactly. A thing like Eat, Pray, Love, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. You never know.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. The book is awesome. Everybody who is interested in motorcycles and Scandinavia, you have to get it. I hope you're going to do a lot of more adventures, Mike.
Yes, I really hope so, after COVID disappears.
Yeah, I promised everyone not to talk about it in the podcast, because everybody's so sick of it. Let's go on traveling once we can, and hope to talk to you again and read more books by you, Lena.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you so much.
Das war Von Meilen und Zeilen. Der Abenteuer-Podcast des Delius Glasing Verlags. Mit Schriftsteller und Globetrotter Tim Kruse.